This week's Sedra, we have the episode of B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. They come to Moshe Rabbeinu and they say that the land on the other side of the Jordan River, Transjordan, is very rich pasture land, and they have an excessive amount of cattle, and therefore this area would be perfect for them. And they asked Moshe Rabbeinu to give them their share in Eretz Yisrael on this side of the Jordan and not in Eretz Yisrael proper. And Moshe Rabbeinu begins a tirade against them, that they seem to be cowards, that they want to stay on this side of the Jordan and not cross over with everybody else and fight for Eretz Yisrael and put their wives and children in danger. And this is the same thing that the spies did, and they melted the hearts of the rest of the Jewish people from wanting to conquer Eretz Yisrael and having the faith that they would be able to do it, and you're doing the same thing. And then they say, that wasn't our intention. We will go as chalutzim, we'll go as the trailblazers before the people and help them conquer Eretz Yisrael, and we won't come back here until that's finished. We'll leave our wives and children here, but we want our portion in this side of Eretz Yisrael, this side of the Jordan, which wasn't fully Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu agrees and made condition with them, if they cross over the Yarden and help the rest of the Jewish people conquer Eretz Yisrael, then they'll be given their portion here. If not, then they'll take their portion in Eretz Yisrael proper. Now, what was the motivation of B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven? And we'll see that what they did was not 100% proper, but I think that if you look deeply, you'll see one common thread in all of the things that the rabbis say that were improper about B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven's request. There is a common thread that points to one general flaw that they had. Okay, let's see what it is. The Medrash says that they had a tremendous amount of cattle, and they were afraid that if they would go into Eretz Yisrael with the rest of the tribes, there would be a chance that they would end up stealing, because their cattle would graze in other people's property, and also that they would end up getting into fights with the other tribes. So to avoid stealing and to avoid fights, they said, we're willing to sacrifice living in Eretz Yisrael to live in Eivor HaYarden in order to avoid those things. That's one medrash. Another medrash is, they saw that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to be buried on that side of the Jordan, and therefore they wanted the skula of being close to Moshe Rabbeinu's burial. So they were willing to sacrifice settling in Eretz Yisrael proper for that segula. Another thing the rabbis say is, their flaw was that their money was more precious to them than settling in Eretz Yisrael. The money was more taking care of their cattle and having a good place where financially they could be more secure was more important to them than the mitzvah of settling in Eretz Yisrael. And then later on, they said that we'll go and fight, and we'll leave our cattle here and our children, and we will build corrals for our cattle and the places for our wives and children. Moshe Rabbeinu said, you got it all wrong. The order is not right. You will not build corrals for your cattle first and then worry about your wives and children. But your wives and children come before your cattle. And their money, their material possessions, were more precious to them than their wives and children. What is the common thread between all of these things? I think the common thread is that they weren't able to distinguish what is the main thing and what is a subordinate thing. They couldn't distinguish between the tofel and the ikar. What is the main thing and what is the subordinate thing? What is the subordinate thing? Maybe somebody should bring her a glass of water. No? Okay. A person in this world has to understand to distinguish between what is the main concern, main things in life, what are the subordinate things in life. Like sometimes the subordinate thing is continuing with a shiur, and the main thing is making sure that somebody doesn't choke to death. So therefore, a person has to be able to distinguish between the main thing and the subordinate thing, and know how to give priority. What are priorities in this world? That's basically the thing. What are the priorities? Sometimes the main thing, right, totally makes the subordinate thing not important at all. And it becomes totally negated to the main thing. We find that by brachos, right? If you're having a bowl of cornflakes and milk, so you don't make a bracha on the milk, you only make a bracha on the cornflakes. Because well, it's really not a good example, but what's it called? You have a wheat cereal and milk. So you make a mezonos, you don't make a shahakol on the milk, because the milk is subordinate. The only reason you're drinking the milk is to be able to eat the bowl of cereal. So then the tofel, the subordinate thing, is totally, what's it called, negated to the main thing. Sometimes, however, it's only a question of priority of kedima, which one comes first. And sometimes, what's it called, it's an idea of how to use the subordinate thing in service of the main thing and not in contradiction to the main thing. Okay? In other words, where one of them has to be sacrificed, you sacrifice the subordinate thing and not the main thing. Right. But when you can use them both together, then you can use the subordinate in service of the main thing, but they don't contradict each other. So understanding what is the main thing, what is the subordinate thing, what are the priorities, how to use the subordinate things in service of the main thing and not in contradiction to them, what to sacrifice when it's necessary to sacrifice one or the other, that was the flaw that B'nai God and B'nai Reuven had. And it therefore showed out in many ways. Firstly, they couldn't distinguish between the main part of Eretz Yisrael and the subordinate part. Eiver HaYarden was not the main part of Eretz Yisrael. It didn't have the full Kedusha, the full holiness of Eretz Yisrael, all the laws that apply in Eretz Yisrael. Not all of them applied in Eiver HaYarden, in Transjordan. Some of them did. And they couldn't distinguish between the mitzvah living in the main part of Eretz Yisrael, which has the full holiness, and living in the subordinate part. And they chose to stay in the subordinate part, right? And that's why Eiver HaYarden wasn't totally Chutz La'aretz, and it wasn't totally Eretz Yisrael. That's why they are flawed by wanting not to live in Eretz Yisrael and to live in Eiver HaYarden. At the same time, the Medrash says, because they did that, they were the first ones to go into exile. Now, if, what's it called, because when Sanchoreth came, he exiled Reuven and Gad. They were the first ones to go. So, the question is, can't be. Exile means you're exiled from Eretz Yisrael, right? Now, if Eiver HaYarden is not Eretz Yisrael, how can you be exiled from it? Elamai, it must be that in regards to Eretz Yisrael proper, it's considered like Chutz La'aretz. But in regards to Chutz La'aretz, it's considered like Eretz Yisrael. So on the one hand, they didn't want to live in Eretz Yisrael proper. They didn't understand what the main thing was. And they chose a subordinate, but therefore they were punished to have to go to Chutz La'aretz, which Eretz Yisrael, Eiver HaYarden compared to Chutz La'aretz, is still considered like Eretz Yisrael. So that is the, that's one place we see this. Another place is that, it's interesting, that had they not taken their portion in Eiver HaYarden, and they had crossed the Jordan and conquered all of Eretz Yisrael, and then come back afterwards and conquered Eiver HaYarden, right, and taken, then it would have been Eretz Yisrael mamish. The halacha is like this, that if we conquer all of Eretz Yisrael, within the borders that God gave us. And then we go out and conquer other lands. All the other lands we conquer after we conquer all of Eretz Yisrael has a din of Eretz Yisrael. In other words, if a Jewish army with a Jewish king, right, with all the other conditions that are necessary for sanctifying Eretz Yisrael within the borders of Eretz Yisrael, would conquer all the borders of Eretz Yisrael, and then go conquer Borough Park, right? Borough Park would become Eretz Yisrael. It would have a law, if you planted things there, you would have to take off Trumas and Maisers. Would have the din of Eretz Yisrael. But if you conquer Borough Park before you conquer all of the land within the borders of Eretz Yisrael, then it doesn't have the din of Eretz Yisrael. So had they had the right priorities, had they had the right timetable, had they first conquered everything in Eretz Yisrael proper and then gone back, it would have been Eretz Yisrael. But because they mixed up the priorities and they took this first, right, and then the other one, sometimes you have priorities. It's a matter of what comes first and what comes second. What is important right now and what can wait? So had they waited, then it would change the whole status of Eivor HaYarden. But because they didn't understand the priorities, the order of importance, and they took this before that, therefore this remained only subordinate to Eretz Yisrael and not Eretz Yisrael itself. Another thing is, same flaw, is that money is not a value in itself. Money is a tool to be used to strengthen the other values in life. But money itself is not an intrinsic value in life. But money can be a subordinate. It can be a tool to be used to strengthen other things. When you look at money as a subordinate enhancer of the important things in life, then you look at it as a present from God. God's giving you a present to make your ability to do the things in this world that are important easier. But if you look at money as a value to itself, then basically you're grabbing it and not using it the way that God intended you to use it, but grabbing it for yourself as a main thing, not as a subordinate thing. So that's how they looked at money. The Medrash says there are three things that if you have them, you have everything. One is wealth, the other is strength, and the third thing is wisdom. When you see them as a present from God, then you have everything. When you grab them, then you have nothing. Now, how does it mean to grab wisdom or grab strength or grab everything God gives? What does it mean? What it means is if you understand that these things are merely subordinates, wisdom, strength, and wealth are not values to themselves, but they're how you use them then in service of God, in enhancing the things that are the intrinsic values in this world, then you look at them as presents that God gave you so you can utilize them in your service of God. But if you think that these things are main things, are intrinsically important on themselves, then you don't look at them as a present from God. You look at them as you grab them for yourself. You grab them for all practical purposes, you grab them out of the framework that God intended them to be. And then you have nothing. When you see them as tools so they can enhance all the important things of this world, you have everything. Wisdom, strength, and wealth. But if you see them as goals in themselves, then you have nothing. Because these are not goals in this world. And if all you have are these things and you don't use them properly, then you have nothing. And therefore, having wealth can enhance our ability to settle Eretz Yisrael, develop Eretz Yisrael, and take the best out of it. But the main thing is settling in Eretz Yisrael. If you use your wealth to negate your ability to sit, you don't want to settle Eretz Yisrael, you just want the wealth, then you've totally mixed up your priorities. You've mixed up what's the main thing and what's the subordinate thing. And you've made a subordinate into a main thing. And therefore, the flaw that B'nai Gad and Reuven has, they were willing to sacrifice their ability to settle in Eretz Yisrael proper for the sake of their money. when they should have seen the money as something that can enhance their living in Eretz Yisrael, but not something that would take the place of their living in Eretz Yisrael. Same thing goes with what's it called with children and money. When you look at the money as being something that can help you raise your children, build your family, right? Make it easier for them, make it easier for you to be able to spend time with your children or whatever, then the money is very, very good. But when you see the money as a goal in itself, and just the opposite, you sacrifice your time with your children to earn more money, sacrifice your health, right? You work yourself into a grave, right? At the expense of your children, right? Then you've taken the priority and making it subordinate, and subordinate making it the priority. And that's what B'nai Gad ruined. They put their money before their children. That was more important to them. So that was the flaw. That was the underlying flaw of B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. They didn't know how to evaluate properly what was the main thing, what was the subordinate thing, and how to use them in conjunction one with the other. However, one could make the mistake to think that if you only look at the main things and you negate the subordinate things, that's also wrong. The subordinate is also important when it's used in the right, with the right priorities, when it's used with the right in the right framework. So therefore, I was thinking, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu, with God's command, added another half a shevet to B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. They didn't originally come, Chatzi Shevet Menashe, the half a tribe of Menashe. It says only B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven came. Yet when Moshe Rabbeinu gave them that part of Eiver HaYarden, he gave them the Transjordan, he included also the half a tribe of Menashe. Half was on this side of the Jordan, half on the other side of the Jordan. Why were they included? So I think that the Rebbeinu Shlom wanted B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven not only to understand what was the priority and what were the secondary things, what was the main thing, what was the subordinate, and know how to give more importance to the main thing than the subordinates. But he also didn't want them to make the mistake to think that the subordinates aren't important at all. So therefore, he put the half a tribe of Menashe specifically because they would point out that even the subordinates are important. Don't make the mistake to think that only the priorities, only the main things important. The subordinates are also important if you use them properly. Therefore, why was Menashe? So first of all, it's Menashe itself, this half wasn't a half. When the Torah says half, it doesn't necessarily mean two equal halves. It means a part. Half can mean part. I'll prove it to you by the Pesach Seder. It says you break the middle matzah in half, and the larger part you save for the afikomen. Now, if you broke it in half, there is no larger part. So therefore, what it means is you break it into two pieces, and each one is called a half, even though it's not a real half, means a part. And the larger part you put away. Okay. So in any case, so they were not half of the tribe Menashe, they were a small portion. We'll see in a little while which small portion they were. And they were definitely subordinate to B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. They were much more in number than the two tribes of Gad and Reuven. Okay. So they, in essence, were subordinate, but yet they were important. They got a share just like the other ones did. In addition, Menashe himself was a subordinate person, because when Ephraim and Menashe, right, Menashe was the older, Ephraim was the younger, yet Yaakov put his right hand on the head of Ephraim when he blessed him, and he, what's it called, preceded Ephraim to Menashe. So Menashe was the proverbial second fiddle. Right, he was a subordinate. He should have been the main thing, but Yaakov designated him as a subordinate. Yet he's also important, right? And another reason why Menashe was considered subordinate is because Menashe, Yosef's children, came from his wife Osnas. Osnas was an interesting woman. she was the daughter of Dinah, Dinah Bas Yaakov, who was violated by Shechem, and she became pregnant from that, and she had this daughter called, Osnas. Osnas married Yosef. Okay? Now, a portion of of Osnas, right, came from Shechem, and a portion came from Dinah. So Osnas herself was mixed with positive side and negative side. She married Yosef, who only had a positive side. The first child had a portion of that negative from Shechem in him. That was Menashe. The second child already was totally on the good side from Yosef, and the Dinah side of Osnas. So Ephraim was the main one, and Menashe remained the subordinate. And that's why he was put in the other side of the Yarden. He wasn't really fit to be in Eretz Yisrael completely, except half of Menashe, the first half of Menashe, had that influence of Shechem, so they were not led into Eretz Yisrael, and the other half didn't have that influence, they were in Eretz Yisrael. So in that respect, they were also subordinate. In addition, there's a Medrash that says that the reason Menashe was put on the other side of the Jordan is because he was being punished for something that happened, that tribe, something happened from the progenitor of the tribe, the original Menashe. What did he do? Yosef sent him to confront the brothers when they still thought he was the second in command in Egypt, not their brother. Yosef sent him to find his cup that supposedly one of the brothers stole, which Yosef had planted in the sack of Binyamin. Menashe was the one who took care of this. And he was the one who found the cup and implied that Binyamin was a ganav and have to come back and Binyamin's going to be punished. And at that point, the Shvatim tore their clothing in mourning because he caused the Shvatim to tear their clothing. His tribe was torn apart into two parts as a tikkun. We'll see in a second, was a tikkun for that. Now, the truth is, Menashe didn't cause this. He was just subordinate to Yosef, who sent him. What do we see from here? That even the subordinate is important. Important enough that if it happens that something happened from a main thing and a subordinate thing, the subordinate thing is also significant and needs a tikkun. And therefore, what was the correction? It wasn't just a punishment. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu, according to others, separate the tribe of Menashe on one side and the other side? Because he was afraid that B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven would forget that they're connected to the rest of the Jewish people. They're in a separate place. They begin to feel like they're a nation to themselves. So he put a half a tribe on each side with them. The people of Menashe should have that feeling for the other half of the tribe and create that achva. So since Menashe caused the brothers to tear their clothing, right, he was zoche to fix that up and to bring the Shvatim together by being the catalyst that connected B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven to the rest of Klal Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. And it's also interesting, it says that this part of Menashe were great Talmid HaChachamim. And they would have an influence on the B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven to realize that the main purpose of Eretz Yisrael is for Torah and mitzvahs, and therefore to remind them that the main thing is not for money. And don't sacrifice Eretz Yisrael for money, so we're going to put Talmid HaChachamim with you to strengthen you in that idea. The Ramban says that originally Menashe didn't come to ask. Only after Moshe Rabbeinu saw that the land was so big, it was too big for two tribes, then he asked, is there anybody else who would like to, volunteer to inherit over here because of the tremendous, and half of the tribe Menashe volunteered. Now the idea is like this. If Eretz Yisrael is a value to itself, okay, it's not something that is subordinate to Torah. Okay? Money is subordinate to Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is subordinate to Torah. Okay. So if the main thing is not how you use Eretz Yisrael, but having it, then how could there be a too big of a portion? Whatever you have, you own, so they own more. What difference does it make? But if it's too big to use properly, then there's no purpose for it. There's no purpose of just owning Eretz Yisrael. You have to be able to use it properly. And if it's too big to use properly, then there's no purpose in it. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu told him. I could give you two tribes this thing, and you could own vast areas, but you'll never be able to use it. This is not a intrinsic value. It's a value to be used properly. So therefore, we're going to give it to another tribe who can use it. Another half a tribe who can use it. And therefore, there's another idea here also. Why Menashe? Yosef was the trailblazer for all the other Shvatim. Remember, we spoke about this and why Yosef did what he did and why they sold him. Yosef was like a miniature of all the other Shvatim. He had within him all that was his coat of many colors. He had many facets to him. Right? Whereas each tribe had one facet that they were supposed to contribute towards the Jewish nation. This one was the king, and this one was the Kohen, and this one was the merchant, and this one was the soldier, and so on. But Yosef had all of them in a miniature way. Why? Because he was supposed to prepare the way for all the other Shvatim. He did that, right? He prepared the way in Egypt for the Golus. Yoshua prepared the way, who came from Ephraim, prepared the way of conquering Eretz Yisrael for the other Shvatim. And Mashiach ben Yosef will prepare the way for Mashiach ben David. Yosef is always the trailblazer. He's always the preparer. And therefore, and Menashe specifically prepares them in a physical, material way, and Ephraim in a spiritual way. Therefore, it was important that there be a representative of Yosef on this side of the Jordan, this side, because all the tribes needed him as the facilitator and trailblazer. So he split the tribe of Menashe in two. One helped the tribes of Reuven and Gad. Yosef is the Yesod. He's the foundation. And all the other tribes have things that you build on that foundation. But the foundation had to be in both places. So therefore, he had to split Menashe, who was the foundation, in, and had all these other reasons too, together with B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, to be a foundation to them, and the foundation to the other 9.5 tribes in Eretz Yisrael. It also says there was another reason that the half the tribe Menashe, it wasn't again the half the tribe. Who was it specifically? The daughters of Tzlafchad. And one of the reasons why they had to stay on the other side of the Jordan, because the Rabbanu Shlom said, Moshe will give you your portion. So it said the Pharisees and told Moshe doesn't give them their portion. If they went into Eretz Yisrael, Moshe's no hitting there anymore. The only place that Moshe, and that's why Moshe got excited, he said, well, if it says I'm going to give them their portion, that means I'm going over the Yarden. And then the Rosh Hashanah said, no, their portion is going to be on this side of the Yarden, where you're going to die. And therefore, they, what's it called, so Moshe had to give them their portion, so they had to take their portion in Eberah Yarden. But because they loved Eretz Yisrael so much, that's why they wanted a share in Eretz Yisrael, so because of that, they were the ones put together, B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, who didn't appreciate the purpose of Eretz Yisrael, who valued their money more than living in Eretz Yisrael, that they would be able to influence them to gain that preciousness of Eretz Yisrael. In addition, it says that they would rather have the segula of being near Moshe Rabbeinu's burial than being in Eretz Yisrael, which also was not understanding priorities. The priorities are the kind of mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, not getting the skula of what's it called, of being near Moshe Rabbeinu's burial. One's a skula, one's a mitzvah. You don't confuse the main thing, the mitzvah, with some kind of skula. I had an incident in my moshav last Friday. A woman called me. She took off challah. She takes off challah with a bracha, whatever, and when she does it, she has in mind Refuah Shleima for this one and a Shidduch for that one or whatever. It's a skula. Let me take off. And she got so involved with all the names that she was thinking about, she forgot what she did with the challah that she took off. She looked all over. She couldn't find it. She said, very possible she put it back in the dough. And she doesn't know where it is. Needed it back into the dough. So in that situation, what you do is you get a Beis Din, three men, and you're mater neder. When you make challah, it's as if you are verbally giving it kedusha. This is challah. It's like making a neder. So it's possible to be mater neder and to take the holiness off the challah retroactively, and then it becomes like regular dough, and then you have to take off challah again. That's what we did. But I told her, I'm only going to do this on one condition. That you never think about any names for refuahs, for shidduchim, when you take a challah. Challah is a mitzvah. It's not a skula, it's a mitzvah. Do the mitzvah as a mitzvah. Your mind got so much mixed up in these skulas that you forgot about the mitzvah. So you do the mitzvah. If after that, you want to say, look, the time of taking challah is a very propitious time. I'm going to take this time and use it for davening for people, that's fine. But don't confuse the mitzvah with a skula. Do the mitzvah as a mitzvah. And then, after that, you can use the time that's propitious, just like when a person lights candles. You don't light candles so you can daven for your children. Or daven for whatever. You light candles because it's a mitzvah to light candles. During the time you're doing that mitzvah, it's possible also to use that time for other things. But don't confuse, I'm lighting candles, why? Because it's time to daven for it. No, you're lighting candles because it's a mitzvah to light candles for Shabbos. During that time, you can use it for a propitious time for davening or whatever. But don't confuse the mitzvah and turn it into a... One of my sons-in-law said, you see this from a Rambam. The Rambam says that a person who writes the names of angels or whatever on a mezuzah for protection is totally distorting the mezuzah. The mezuzah is a mitzvah. It's not a protection. Now, the mezuzah can be protection too. But don't confuse the skula with the mitzvah. Mitzvah is a mitzvah. Don't turn it into something that it's not. So here also, they wanted to get the school of being around Moshe Rabbeinu, what's it called, burial, and for that they were willing to forfeit the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. You don't forfeit a mitzvah for the sake of a school. That's why it's interesting, Menashe in the end really settled in Eretz Yisrael, and that's by no slacha, because the halacha is that there were portions of Eretz Sichon Va'og that were not meant to be inherited at this point, because they belonged to Moab. But Sichon conquered them, and then we were able to conquer them. But they weren't part of the land that was promised to Avraham Avinu. But the land that Menashe got was Eretz Rephaim, which was promised to Avraham Avinu. So they really got a portion in real Eretz Yisrael. That part was more of the real Eretz Yisrael than the other part, and therefore the Bnei Slavchot got to live in real Eretz Yisrael as opposed to where Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven were in Transjordan. There's an interesting side point, doesn't really fit in with this, but just that really these three tribes were not fit to, these three, two and a half tribes weren't fit to settle in Eretz Yisrael. Reuven, because when Yaakov conceived Reuven, he thought he was living with Leah. So his entire mind and action weren't involved in conceiving Reuven because he thought that he was living with Rachel, not with Leah. So even though the action was pure, the intention wasn't there. And the main thing is not the action, but the intention. Same thing goes with God. God... Rachel gave Leah gave her servant Zilpah to Yaakov, not necessarily with his consent. She forced it on him. So again, the action was fine, but the intention wasn't there. So God was conceived also from a woman that Yaakov wasn't necessarily with full volition wanted. And Menashe, we said, came from Osmas. There was a mixture, a little bit of action over here, even though intent was 100% okay, the opposite. So here is also a little bit of an idea of main thing and subordinate. The subordinate is the action. The main thing is the intention. Here, the intention was missing, and the subordinate was there, but not the main thing. And Menashe was just the opposite. The main thing was there, the subordinate was missing. In any case, I want to connect this to the 3 weeks. The Gemara says that this question was asked to the Chachamim and the Viyim and even the Malachim, and nobody could answer it. And unless, until God himself had to answer the question, Al-Ne'a of the Horitz, why was the land lost? Why did we go into Golis and the land was desolate? Why did that happen? And nobody can answer the question. Until the Rabban Hashem said, Al-Ozlam is Torah. See, because they forsook my Torah. And the rabbis say, it doesn't mean they didn't keep the Torah. It means they didn't make the bracha before they learned Torah. Lo berchu al ha-Torah tchila. They didn't make the blessing on the Torah first. So what does it mean? Lechora, we went into Golis and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed for specific sins. The first Beis HaMikdash because of immorality and idolatry and murder. And the second Beis HaMikdash because of senseless hatred. Sinas Chinam. So what was the question? And doesn't say that. It says because we didn't make a bracha before we learned Torah. So I was thinking, the question wasn't why was the Beis HaMikdash destroyed. That we know why. But the Beis HaMikdash could have been destroyed and we could have remained in Eretz Yisrael. Why did we have to leave Eretz Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael become desolate? What was the purpose in that? So don't have a Beis HaMikdash and stay in Eretz Yisrael. We live in Eretz Yisrael now without a Beis HaMikdash. What was the reason why the Jewish people had to leave Eretz Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael had to be desolate? That was the question. That nobody can answer. And the answer was, Al-Ozvam is Torah. See, Ozvam doesn't mean that they forsook it completely. It means they left it temporarily when they shouldn't have. As for instance, Chazal say, in Tazveni Yom, if you leave me one day, I'll leave you 2 days. The more you get away from me, meaning you're not forsaking the Rabban Shalom, you're just involved in something else. But that something else isn't important enough to be involved in. That's the problem. Some say, I wanted to say, but I think I saw somebody says it also, Shalom Berchu Batorah Tchila means the following. There are a lot of brachas we make in the morning. Okay? There's Birchas HaTorah, the bracha on the Torah, and there's the bracha on all the physical material things. They made the brachas on the physical material things first, and not on the Torah. They didn't understand priorities. They didn't understand that the Torah was the main thing and everything else is subordinate. But they gave more importance to the subordinate than to the priority. Or when they blessed their children, right, it says you bless them, Ephraim first, then Menashe. Ephraim is the, what's it called, spiritual. I want you to be Talmidei Chachamim, Benos Torah. And I also want you to have a good parnasa, and I want you to be able to be established materially in this world. When they gave the bracha, they gave the opposite. We want you to be established and have a good career and good money. And also you should be a Talmud Chacham too. They didn't know the priorities. They put the secondary thing before the first thing. And it could be that that's also inherent in the simple meaning. They didn't make the beginning bracha on the Torah, which is La Sok B'Divrei Torah. You have to make the Torah the main, what's it called, Asim, the main effort of your life. Right? This is what you're involved in. This is your main business. Everything else is subordinate to that. How? Well, sometimes you have to go earn a living, and you have to, what's it called, you have to do things that are not Torah. But it's all for the sake of being able to have the Torah. Those subordinate things to enhance your ability to learn Torah. If you don't earn a living, you won't be able to learn Torah. You won't be able to pay your rent or your mashkanta. You won't have no place to live. So you have to be involved in other things. But realize those other things are not a contradiction to the main thing, they're an enhancement. And when they are a contradiction or negation, then you sacrifice them for the sake of the main thing, not the opposite. So that was the idea, lo berchu b'Torah tchila. Right? They didn't make the bracha on Torah, not in the, for themselves, not for their children, and they didn't understand that their major occupation in this world was Torah and mitzvahs. And everything else was subordinate to that. And therefore, since Eretz Yisrael is not a, what's it called, a value to itself, but it's there to enable us to keep the Torah and mitzvahs properly. Eretz Yisrael is a place we can learn the Torah best. Ein Torah ketoras Eretz Yisrael, avira Eretz Yisrael machim. The atmosphere makes you smarter. And Eretz Yisrael is a place where you can do all the mitzvahs. You can't do all the mitzvahs outside of Eretz Yisrael, they don't apply. So Eretz Yisrael is the place, it's the tool for Torah and for mitzvahs. It's not the main thing, it's a subordinate thing. But if you look at Eretz Yisrael as a main thing, and you don't understand that it's subordinate to Torah, but you make the Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, meaning the settling of Eretz Yisrael, the material things, the main thing, then you don't need Eretz Yisrael. Then not only do you lose the Beis HaMikdash, but you lose your right to live here because you're living here in a distorted way. And Eretz Yisrael is becoming something that prevents you from keeping Torah mitzvahs, not enhances your Torah and Mitzvahs, and therefore the land is desolate and you're out of it, so you'll appreciate when you come back what it's really all about. That's the idea. Bottom line, we have to learn from this parsha to identify what are the priorities in life, what are the things that are intrinsically valuable, and what are the subordinate things that serve those main things, but never should be things that contradict them or deter them. When they don't enhance, and they are a deterrent, then you have to sacrifice the secondary things for the sake of the main thing. And the same thing, you have to know what your priorities are, what you take care of first and what take care of second, the main thing or the secondary thing, or whatever. That's part of what being a Torah Jew is, being able to identify priorities, identify what's main, what's subordinate, and deal with them properly.